WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned to Monday Night Talk. My name is Kevin Tachi, and I'm your host. 10 years serving as host of this fantastic program, originally brought on air, brought to life by former state senator and now Weymouth Mayor Bob Hedlund, original host. We have a great show lined up for you this evening, which starts right after traffic. Most of the show is going to kind of focus on Plymouth. Of course, we're going to start with your state rep serving in the 1st Plymouth District, Matt Muratore. Will be joining us for the State House report. Interesting enough, I have to say, and I say it all the time, and I say it with great pride, that we have some fantastic legislators, lawmakers here on the South Shore who are so willing and ready whenever local media reaches out and says, hey, could you share a few moments with us? We have, you know, something we want to talk about. I've never had a problem with a state rep or a state senator coming on and chatting for 20 minutes, and usually it's very informative, which that's the idea, is to keep your constituents and keep the folks better informed as to what's going on with our government. Following State Rep Matt Muratore, we will speak with Peter Brown, who is the president of the Board of Directors for Pilgrim Hall Museum, and the museum's executive director, Donna Curtin, and we're going to get an update as to how things are going. Here we are, we're cruising through 2021. Want to get an idea as to how things are going for the museum. Are they making any plans? How have they made it through the coronavirus? And what's on the docket come later this year as we start seeing, hopefully, the lighter at the end of the tunnel growing brighter and brighter, and we hopefully return to normal. That's what we're all hoping for, right? Hour number two, we will speak with Matt Muratore. He will join me again because he's going to step aside first for 20 minutes, but he'll rejoin me. Joining us for the conversation, Michelle Pecoraro. He is the executive director of Plymouth 400. And we'll get an idea as to where things stand for the 400th commemoration, some of the events that they got on deck, and how they've been able to make it through the pandemic. Lastly, I'm going to speak with Mary Waldron. She's the executive director of the Old Colony Planning Council. It is kind of like executive director night, isn't it? Well, we're going to speak with, just get in a little bit of insight as to what it is that Old Colony Planning Council does. And if you don't know, they're an agency that does a lot of work when it comes to traffic study, transportation needs in and around the 17 communities that they serve. Mary will stop by and chat with me about that, and hopefully we'll have Mary on for other segments down the road as things start developing more and more for the Old Colony Planning Council. So with that, we've got a full rundown as to who is going to be appearing on the program this evening. Right now, though, time for us to step aside, give you a final traffic report on the evening. Being brought to you by Brendan's Smoke Shop, online at brendansmokeshopma.com, with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Pond, Stoughton, Bedford, and Weymouth.
Well, thanks, Kevin. 95 South, you're still dealing with the car off the exit ramp into the woods at Mechanic Street. The expressway northbound, there's now a crash at Neponset Circle. Southbound, you're in the brakes from Mass Ave down to a breakdown at South Bay. You're back in it from Furnace Brook to the split. Routes 3 South and 24 South are clear, heading down to 495. And 93, still delay-free either way between Braintree and Canton. This report is sponsored by Unbound.org. A girl in Kenya dreams of becoming a doctor, an elder in Guatemala, dreams of being part of a community. Reach out and change their world, and it will change your own. Unbound.org. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Lisa DiMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
I'm amazed at the number of you here in the Commonwealth that aren't aware of the tobacco flavor ban. All flavored vape and tobacco products are banned from being sold here in Massachusetts, including menthol. It's okay. You can always go to New Hampshire or stop by one of our 9 locations and pick up some flavored CBD hemp wraps. Grape, pineapple, watermelon, strawberry. That's right. We have a huge selection of full-spectrum CBD hemp wraps. It's just another example of our American ingenuity. Oh, and a very special thank you to Speaker of the House Robert DeLeo for 30 years on Beacon Hill. May your greatest achievement be sending billions of Massachusetts taxpayer dollars to New Hampshire. Billions of dollars for their infrastructure, their roads, their police and firefighters, etc., etc.,
etc., etc. Count them, etc., etc.
Brennan's Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, and now on Bridge Street in North Weymouth. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts. Flavored CBD hemp wraps, dudes.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Time for our first segment of Monday Night Talk. And if you're new to this program, we do something called the Statehouse Report. Now, do we always speak with a representative of the state who works at the Statehouse? Not always. I'd say maybe 5% of the time. Maybe we'll sneak a city councilor or a mayor or a town administrator in. But most times we will speak with someone who works up on Beacon Hill. Joining us today, gentleman who is a part of the massive rotation of state reps and state senators, a good friend, Matt Muratori, joins us serving the 1st Plymouth District. Representative, how are you?
Good evening, Kevin. How are you doing?
We're doing pretty good. So far, so good. I cannot believe that we're already sitting in the month of February here in 2021. Where the heck is the time gone?
Yeah, you know, but in a lot of ways, as I said off air before we came on, it feels like that 2020 has 14 months in it now. And it still feels like things are continuing from 2020 into 2021.
Yeah, and the thing that's interesting is that it's still, you know, as I look to have conversations with folks to inform and keep my audience up to date, it seems like COVID is still the top talking point. And, you know, when you and I were talking about, hey, we're going to sit down on Monday night and what do we want to talk about? The one thing you said to me is like, my God, it's like COVID is just, it's just so relevant that it's the top 5 things that we're dealing with these days. And there's not really a lot of room to address other issues unless they somehow are more paramount than this pandemic we're dealing with.
Yeah, no, it's so true, Kevin. The COVID has just consumed what we do as legislators, staff that we have and what we do, the staff does. Betty DeBenedictis does a terrific job in my office, you know, dealing with things that are even related to COVID, which is like unemployment is a direct factor of COVID. Unemployment claims are going through the roof again, and we're getting a number of emails, number of calls trying to help them navigate the system. We recently had a call with Secretary Acosta, the Secretary of Labor here in Massachusetts, and you know, they've gone from 300 people they had originally to over 2,000 people, over 600 people in a call center, and the 16 million unemployment claims were filed in 2020. In a typical year, it's somewhere about 3 million claims. So you can see the magnitude that has gone on here in Massachusetts because of COVID, just on one subject, unemployment.
How often are you, your office, your colleagues hearing about fraud when it comes to unemployment?
Yeah, there was a big conversation with the secretary about fraud, and it's a huge issue. It's not just here in the Commonwealth, it's all throughout the country. You know, we weren't prepared for it as a state or as a country for the fraud that's happening. Matter of fact, the Secretary of Costa indicated that she was part of the fraud. Somebody used her name and information to try to get unemployment. It's a huge issue. It's complicating the issue for unemployment, and a lot of times it's delaying employment in delaying payments to people in need. Sometimes up to 2 to 3 months, and for most of these people that are being delayed, it's the lower income people that are getting delayed. It's frustrating. And people out there hurting. So we're doing, our best to try to, change the systems around a little bit and try to get unemployment out faster.
It's interesting you say that, because I actually had a family member who also was a victim of fraud, where they were sent an email saying, I guess the email had stated something about that person filing a claim and needing more information. And we know, and, the person's like, I am gainfully employed. I do not need this.
Yeah. And it's happening more than you think.
Well, what concerns me is knowing that right now, the folks down in D.C., the new administration are pushing to increase and be able to give to those people who need, extend those benefits. How is this going to hurt that? At least on the national level, and how will that trickle down to Massachusetts? Just in your opinion.
Yeah, sure. And I think there's still some need, and it's nice the federal government is going to be able to do something more. But it's relying on the states to actually get it out. So the states have to work within the systems, and it does make it more difficult. It does create more fraud that way as well. We'll get through it. Like everything else, we'll work through it. We'll get through the process, and all the legislators have great staff that are working with the secretary and her staff. And we will together, we'll get through this with everyone.
I think the one thing that I want to make sure that I make mention, and I will try to do it when I have some of your fellow colleagues from the South Shore on, is the great work that the state reps and state senators are doing, have done during COVID. You are a prime example of someone who has gone the extra mile to use all your resources when it comes to better informing people during COVID. Yourself, someone who is always utilizing something like a PAC TV and doing programs and providing that necessary information. Kudos to you. What kind of work goes into that on top of your day job up at the State House? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, everyone had to be creative and had to pivot back in March when this happened. And I think, first of all, all of us personally had to get through the sort of the grief of all this and what we're all going through, and how do we handle this? How do we become relevant? And so it quickly became evident to us, myself and our town moderator, Steve Trifoletti, and our chairman of our board, Ken DeVaris, that we need to get trusted information out to people. So back in March, we started these daily programs that we were doing, and PAC TV, led by Julie Thompson, have been fantastic and never saying no to anything. And we figured out how to do it. We just did our 86th show the other day. We're doing them weekly now. With everything that's been going on in the country, with regard to trying to get relevant information from trusted sources has always been difficult. So we found that we had a niche here. We have all sorts of guests on every single week, from the sheriff to the Plymouth County DA to epidemiologists to physicians, the Chamber of Commerce, people that give you local information, trusted information, and tell it like it is. We had a show last week that we were talking about vaccines. Vaccines is a tough subject to talk about right now. A lot of people are struggling to get appointments. People that are over the age of 75, it's a difficult situation to do. But I simply explained it's a supply and demand issue. When you have 1 million people over the age of 75 looking to get vaccines, and you only have 100,000 that was allocated for this week by the federal government, you can do the math. You know, so one thing I said ending the show the other day was as a quote from Walt Whitman that Governor Baker mentioned in his State of the State address. It says, you know, be curious, not judgmental. And what I meant by that is, you know, ask why things are happening. Don't be so critical and don't be so quick to say, you know, how come I'm not getting it, but somebody else is. Find out the information first. Find out what's happening first and what we're doing to correct it. If we're making mistakes, we'll correct them. Website at the, for the vaccine does need improvement. There's a call center that will be coming that will help for people that are over the age of 75 or over the age of 65 to help with appointments. And there'll be other changes that'll be made to the website. But we all got to be patient, and we all just have to, you know, again, be curious, not judgmental.
It was interesting in one of the governor's regular updates that he's been doing since we've been dealing with COVID, and his way of getting information out is venting his frustration with how much of the vaccine, how much of the product the state has been able to acquire. Did you have a chance to be able to either hear the governor's discussion on that or at least speak with folks at the State House and be able to hear firsthand the frustration as to how slow we are receiving the vaccine?
Yeah, sure. We actually have a monthly call with the governor as a caucus, and so we had that last week. And you know, he's very candid in his conversations, really has been showing his frustration with the federal government. You know, for the last 2 or 3 months, and I think now though it sounds like we're starting to turn a corner a little bit with the federal government, so that the information that we're getting on how many vaccines we're going to be getting will be a little bit more reliant than probably was before. So we'll have a better idea how many appointments we can put out every week. Every Thursday, we get from the federal government how much we're going to get in vaccines. Last week, we got it up from 100,000 to 120,000. So we knew on Thursday we could add 120,000 appointments to the website. And the distribution going out to, you know, a good portion probably goes to, about half of it goes to Gillette, and another good portion goes to Fenway, and then it fans out from there. But Thursday is the best day to go on the website to make appointments. At least now we're having a better idea of that amount. What was happening before is we'd be told we were getting 100,000 and we only have 80, and we already had appointments made out for people. So, but I think now we feel more confident with the information coming out of Washington.
Because tuning in, we're speaking with State Representative Matt Muratori, catching up with him, finding out what's going on in the district, talking a little COVID, touching on the vaccine and getting people inoculated. One of the other things that actually took place today is the relaxing of how many people can be, the percentage of people that can be in a restaurant or an eating establishment, increasing from 25 to 40%. How important is that for folks in your district, knowing that tourism is something that we're trying to increase here in the Commonwealth?
Yeah, it's been a tough haul for our community, because we rely on tourism as our number one industry. We rely on an awful lot. And the restaurants are key to us, you know, particularly with the meals tax coming in, et cetera. Today at 5 a.m., the governor has removed the stipulation of 25% capacity. It has increased it back to 40%, which was prior to Christmas. It was 40%, and it was changed right after Christmas. There's also, you know, how it helps is it's a big difference when you're a small restaurant that maybe only has maybe, you know, 20 seats, and you can only have, you know, 25% of that. When you can have 40%, it makes a little bit more difference. There's other things that can happen as well. You know, sometimes some of the gyms can increase capacity, you know, libraries, museums, retail shops, offices, there's movie theaters. So there's a lot of other industries that can increase more capacity now. So I think the good news in this is we're seeing the numbers are improving much better. I report on the testing numbers and the vaccine numbers on a weekly basis. And our 7-day positivity rate on January 1st was 8.7%. Last Wednesday, it was at 3.44%. So we see the numbers of people getting COVID going down and dropping. Hospitalizations have dropped from 2,500 people in the hospital down to 1,900 people in the hospital in 3 weeks. So we're seeing the numbers going in the right direction, and that helps us make better decisions for our business community as well.
We have a few more minutes left. Just with you, you have agreed to join me in about 20 minutes. We will be speaking with Michelle Pecoraro. She's the executive director of Plymouth 400. Reason why I thought I would pair the two of you, it was a little more than a year ago that I had the two of you on, and we were all hyped up for, all right, let's get these, you know, these events going to celebrate the 400th anniversary of America's hometown. I'm definitely looking forward to that, and I'm looking forward to that conversation, at least on your own. Anything that, how do you feel as to things are trending in the right direction? How do you feel we're doing that we're going to see events? This just me and you without adding Michelle into the mix.
Yeah. You know, and Michelle and I have talked about this recently as well. It's it's a tough one to call. I mean, the phase three of the vaccine is going to start in March. The end of March, beginning of April. But at that point, you know, we need to get about a little over a million vaccines out per month starting in March in order to get everyone in the first round of them on the second round. So I think things will get better. As I said, I think you'll see improvements. You'll see more people masked. I think will be a given probably for the rest of the year, at least, if not longer. But the large crowds, you know, I've said to people, I'm not sure about the 4th of July parade in Plymouth. As you know, Kevin, is a big event every year.
Yes.
A lot of people come, you know, tens of thousands of people come to that. I'm just not sure that's going to happen. I feel more comfortable saying that most likely the Thanksgiving Day parade, which has tens of thousands of people coming in Thanksgiving time, may be more realistic.
Something definitely to look forward to. As we wrap up this segment, I give you an opportunity, anything that we did not touch upon while we've been chatting, but you want to take a moment to share, whether it's a public service announcement for something ongoing in your district or just a general note of some information you want to share to the general population here on the South Shore. Anything you would like to share?
Sure. Well, a couple of things. One of the things is I just want to share with people that I just been appointed to the task force in Plymouth County for human trafficking. And I'm looking forward to our first meeting coming up this week on that. And, you know, when I told my wife about it, that, you know, I was going to be on this task force, she goes, is that a real issue here in Plymouth County? And boy, it's a real issue in every community. And the more you learn about it, the more it's a little scary. So we're going to be getting some information out to people on this and really working on this through a federal grant that we received. And the other thing I just want people to know is, you know, again, as Walt Whitman said, be curious, not judgmental. But we here as your legislative delegation, no matter what community you're in, we're here to help. So reach out to your legislators. Don't be frustrated. If you have questions with regard to unemployment, with regards to getting a vaccine appointment, we are here to help and support. In this area, we are looking to get a large vaccine site in our area. We are looking at the Kingston Collection as a possible location to have a large vaccination site similar to Gillette. We could probably give as many out as Gillette is doing. So stay tuned. More sites are coming, but feel free to reach out to your office, your state rep or your state senator's office if you have any questions about anything. Just don't be frustrated.
Hopefully next time we have you on, we could talk in depth about the budget process. I know it was just released, the governor's budget, so it's a little too soon to ask you any questions about it, but are you hopeful at least for the upcoming fiscal year that we're seeing better times?
Yeah, I think in looking at the governor's budget, it was nice to see, you know, the level of funding for, you know, cities and towns, more money for education, but the revenue is probably not going to be there like it was in the past. So we're really going to have to take a hard look at this. I've actually lobbied our party, Brad Jones, our leader, to see if I can be on House Ways and Means. So fingers crossed I can be on House Ways and Means and really get more into that budget. So we'll stay tuned for that. We'll see what happens.
Fantastic. Here he is, State Rep Matt Muratore, our guest. Fear not, though. He's only going to take a brief few minutes and be back at the top of the hour. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk. You're on 95.9 WATD. Please don't go anywhere.
Daddy, I used that tea kettle to melt the ice off your windshield. Now there's beautiful and pretty crisscrosses and sparkly spiderwebs all over the windshield.
What?
Can we do mom's too? Can we?
Oh, windshield broken? My boys do a good job.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call.
You currently have a great opportunity to support local business and get a great deal from local restaurants. The Marshfield Chamber and Marshfield Public Schools are partnering for the Together Marshfield Initiative. Now through February 15th, you can order gift cards through participating restaurants and save money. Every $25 gift card will cost only $20 for dine-in or takeout for now or later. These cards are a great deal for your family. Be sure to order by the end of the 15th. Choose from participating restaurants at marshfieldchamber.org.
Buying, selling, or trading in a car? Learn from the experts how to make the process work for you. Tune into the Boss Auto Show every Saturday after the news at noon on 95.9 WATD. Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. And it's almost like Plymouth night, as we just had State Rep Matt Muratori on as our guest. How can I not talk Plymouth without talking with Peter Brown and Donna Curtin, Executive Director of the Pilgrim Hall Museum? Interesting enough, I think this is the first time that I'm actually letting Donna know verbally that thanks to her the fantastic exhibit at the hall that we did in November 2019, it was recognized by the Mass Broadcasters Association for a 2020 Soundbite Merit Award because of that fantastic Pathfinders Women of Plymouth. So you're hearing it here first, Donna, that that fantastic segment that was put together with the help of yourself and Peter Brown. It's so many people who participated. I want to thank you and congratulate you for being a part of that award.
Well, that's very exciting news, Kevin. Thanks for letting us know. And of course, congratulations to WATD for receiving that award. We were very proud of the Pathfinders exhibit and had a group of local women come in to talk in a very far-ranging way about the experiences of women, both historically and in, you know, our current society. It was really a fun project to be a part of. And one of the things to look forward to when Pilgrim Hall Museums reopens in the spring, that same exhibit, the award-winning show, is going to be open for viewing for the public when we reopen the museum in April.
And it's the very purpose of having this particular segment is here we are in the new year. Yeah, we're in February, but we wanted to take a moment on this show to recognize, you know, the things that are going on, especially, I mean, again, later on in the program, we're going to talk a little bit about Plymouth 400 and what's going to be happening with those celebrations. I know folks love going to Pilgrim Hall and taking a walk around, whether it's for an exhibit or some of the things that you have on display. And also allow me to, you know, mention that Peter Brown is the president, the board of directors for the hall. So apologies, Peter, for not mentioning that and taking 2 minutes into the segment to do so and recognize you. But I thought it was important for us to get together and talk and apprise folks as to some of the things that are going on in the hall, especially with vaccines being distributed, with the understanding that maybe we might see a semblance of normalcy, and that folks, before they start traveling out of the state, they're probably going to want to reinvest themselves in some of their local establishments and organizations and get better acquainted. What better way to do it but to take a visit to Pilgrim Hall Museum?
Well, we're located right in the heart of historic downtown Plymouth, so I think all of us, both the cultural community in Plymouth, which has certainly had a tough year this past year, but also our local business community, I think we're really looking forward with a lot of optimism to what we can anticipate, as you say, Kevin, to something of a return to normalcy, perhaps in the spring or certainly we hope in the summer. coming forward. So Pilgrim Hall Museum absolutely wants to be a part of that. But in the meantime, we know, you know, we still want to fulfill our mission of being an educational organization. So like so many places, we are doing much more in a virtual capacity than we ever did before. And we've got some great things on our winter schedule. So even though the doors of the physical museum might not be open, there are ways that we hope to engage people. And there's a lot of stuff, I think, that would be of interest to listeners on the South Shore. But President Peter Brown might have more to say about our, you know, anticipation about getting back into the, you know, the real life world as the vaccine unfolds and people begin to feel safer about venturing out.
Yeah, and one of the things that Donna hit on was that the museum has been retrofitted to be safe and COVID friendly. So when we reopen, hopefully that once people get vaccinated and stuff, we'll be able to get up to speed. I think our opening, we're talking about maybe April, was that the case? So right now, everything pretty much, if you want educational seminars, or just go look around or peruse, go to the website and check out all the exhibits that are online and our tapestry exhibit, look for anything you want right there until we get to reopen. One of the things that I'm really proud of is that being past chair of the chamber, we're seeing the connection between tourism and business community in the downtown. And I'm looking forward to, like what they did last year when they closed down Main Street and Court Street and made it one way, they're gonna do that again in the spring. And there's a lot of new restaurants. In fact, the Herald just did a big story on the small restaurants and the thriving businesses that are still in place in Plymouth that are still surviving. So hopefully we can partner up and be part of that system. So when people go to visit downtown for those restaurants, they come see us at the Pilgrim Hall Museum.
We love the idea of partnership. And as a matter of fact, with some of our nonprofit colleagues, we're doing some specific partnering. We've had a decades-long partnership with the Plymouth Antiquarian Society on a series of tours of Burial Hill, and we're unrolling our 2021 program, which is looking at, they're called First Saturday Tours. And the first Saturday of every month of the year, for 2021, we're looking at some historic firsts in Plymouth. And these are all going to be programs that are going to be live streamed on our Facebook pages. So they're virtual programs. So whether the pandemic conditions are good or bad, we're going to be able to let people look at some historic firsts. I think the first one that we've got coming up since this interview, Kevin, is going to be on March 6th. And it's going to be looking at the first women voters of Plymouth. And that'll be live streaming at 1 p.m. on Pilgrim Hall Museum and the Plymouth Antiquarian Society's Facebook pages.
How important has using platforms like a Zoom or being able to partner up to virtually share what it is that the Pilgrim Hall Museum does for you to be able to survive through a global pandemic?
Completely essential. You know, we would not be able to do the work that our institution was formed 200 years ago to achieve without these technical abilities right now. There's just no way we could do it. So, and actually, it's been so exciting. That's one of the funny benefits of this crisis that we're all living through, is that it's, you know, encouraged us and in some ways forced us to be more creative, to be more modern in a way, to reach out to people in new ways. So for example, one of our other partnerships that we probably wouldn't have done in the same way in the past is with the Marshfield Historical Society. So, you know, small organizations like ours and theirs can get together. We're doing a Zoom webinar that's going to be on Sunday, February 21st for a virtual book launch for the history of the first English baby born in Plymouth Colony, Peregrine White, who settled in Plymouth, born in Plymouth in Plymouth Harbor in December 1620, and then lived the rest of his life out in Marshfield. So people might have heard of Peregrine White in Marshfield, but you're going to have the chance to actually find out with author Stephen O'Neill, who's written this new biography of him. And those kinds of things, you know, we might not have done in the same way if it wasn't for this technology that allows us all to come together over distance.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Donna Curtin, Executive Director of the Pilgrim Hall Museum in historic downtown Plymouth, as well as the President of Board of Directors for the museum, Peter Brown. Peter, what has it been like to be the president of the board for an organization like Pilgrim Hall Museum?
Humbling. It's quite an honor that they asked me to chair it this year, be the president this year. And there's a lot of history. Donna took me for a tour of the archives down cellar of the museum. And there is just, I'm in awe of the stuff that we have, exhibits that we rotate through, the people, the trustees that are involved, the heritage that they're leaving, the legacies that I've seen. It's just, and then the pandemic, even though we've been closed in and stuff, is a huge positive attitude that we're going to see in the next 4 or 5 years. People reliving history. And as you can see with the national and local and national politics that we've had in the past year and a half, people are looking into the history of their roots. And we're going to be that place where they can relive it, they can read it, and tell stories about it. So I'm looking forward to it.
How cautiously optimistic do you have to be when you're planning out the rest of 2021 into 2022, Donna? Whether it's exhibits or the length of exhibits, whether you're going to start filtering people to come into the museum, but in the smaller numbers, or are you sticking with virtual programs?
Well, this is the difficulty that so many of us face. How do you plan when you really don't know exactly what's coming forward? And the situation on the ground is just changing every day. It seems we get a new piece of news that might make us hopeful or might set us back a little bit. So it really is something of a juggling act. And, you know, we are an institution with a very long history. We've been a part of the South Shore's cultural community literally for 200 years, two centuries. So, you know, we take the long view. We're going to do everything we can to reach out to people and connect with our community, you know, as we go forward by whatever means seems to be the best choice at the moment. So we know that in the next few months going forward, that's still a virtual situation. But we're really hoping and looking forward to being able to be more live and in person and face to face as we go through the year. But we're not planning on any, you know, large in-person events really until possibly the very end of this year. It just doesn't seem like that's going to be you know, a reasonable assumption to make. However, we do know when it is safe for people to come together. One of the things a lot of us have been talking about the pent-up desire to reconnect, to have fun together and to get out there. And we do want to make certain that we're prepared and ready to go forward with that kind of thing when the day comes. We love those in-person events. There's nothing like seeing people face-to-face, and we'll be there when it's time and safe for us to be able to offer those kind of events again.
And again, as I teased earlier on in the segment, again, we're going to have State Rep Matt Muratori will return hour number two with Michelle Pecoraro, Executive Director. It's also like it's Executive Director night, isn't it? Of course, she presides over the Plymouth 400. You know, and part of our conversation is going to be about, you know, having to put a lot of the commemorative events on the back burner or trying to push things back so you can still be able to enjoy them. How much of those activities will Pilgrim Hall Museum be a part of? Will you be partnering with the Plymouth 400 or be working in conjunction with them as well?
We've been a very close organizational and business partner of Plymouth 400 since the beginning. So yes, and we've participated, you know, with them in some of the virtual activities that they've done, you know, with the impact of COVID on what our commemoration plans had been. One of the projects that we're involved with the Plymouth 400 has been the concept of creating a park that would help commemorate the 400-year history. We have received some grant funding towards that, and that's a project that we're going to continue to develop. But we really think that this park, if you will, a 2020 park, is also going to be an opportunity for all of us to commemorate what we've lived through during these COVID times. We're going to look back to previous historical experiences of dealing with events like this. What happened with the Wampanoag people with the Great Dying? That was a pandemic that you know, had a tremendously disruptive effect on native communities in the 17th century. What happened when the Pilgrims arrived in 1620 and half the colony dies in that first year? And then we have what we all lived through in 2020 with the, you know, the spread of a contagious illness and how that really shut down so much of our society and our way of living. So we have this park project, and it would be right on top of Coles Hill, the most historic ground in Plymouth, overlooking Plymouth Rock and the harbor and the Mayflower too, and near the State Memorial, Pilgrim State Memorial Park, to have a way for people to come together and really think about what have we all lived through this past year and how does that help us sort of reconnect through time to other episodes in the past that relate to Plymouth and Plymouth Colony history.
Right, and again, stimulating tourism in Plymouth, that's also another key element. Peter, I'll give you an opportunity to also answer in regards to partnering with Plymouth 400 in any of their events that they're going to have throughout the rest of this year and anything they may spill into next year.
I think what you're going to see is a lot more local people being involved in all this tourism, because people still are unsure of the safety of traveling. So as we saw during the past summer when things were kind of opened up, well, the downtown Plymouth was packed. And I think this year, more than ever, I think it's going to be more local. You're going to see a lot of people from different educational sources being following through. And with the us help, you know, us working with all the other nonprofits and historical societies and stuff, I think it's going to be a benefit. So I'm looking forward to it. The only thing that I'm worried about is that hopefully we don't do them all at the same time. I'd like to see it spread out so we can enjoy it.
Yeah, and you're tuned into Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WHD. We just got 2 or 3 minutes left to wrap up this segment in the first hour of the program. Anything that we haven't touched upon or anything that you want to kind of leave with our listeners in regards to Pilgrim Hall Museum and some of the events and activities that you have in the works, or even if they want to find out more about the virtual events that have been done or that you're doing?
Well, I'd remind people that this year, 2021, is actually the 400th anniversary of many of the events that we associate with the history of early Plymouth. It was the first full year of settlement. So we do have some very important historical milestones coming up, including the anniversary of the event that we call the First Thanksgiving this fall, the 400th anniversary of that event, and the 400th anniversary of the first actual encounter and meeting between the Wampanoag people and the people of Plymouth Colony. So it's still a very historically rich time for us. And Pilgrim Hall Museum was really created to share that history with our communities, both local and further afield. And we invite people to utilize our resources at www.pilgrimhall.org and get involved. It's so important, I think, for all of us here to support the cultural organizations in our region. And I'd put Pilgrim Hall in that list, but so many other wonderful historical, cultural organizations that we have really have relied on the support of our local friends and members and relatives and residents, I should say. And we're grateful for that, but we also do encourage you to keep it going because we do need it.
Pete, I'll give you a chance, but I also want to make sure I recognize you and Tiny and Sons Glass for being a proud premier sponsor of Monday Night Talk, other than being the president of the board of directors for Pilgrim Hall Museum. Anything you want to say quickly as we wrap up this segment, my friend?
I just want to thank Donna for all the work she did and her staff last year for coming through this COVID situation. And it's just amazing what they did to the museum and how they got it ready for this coming year. I want to thank our advocacy from our legislative force. They've always been a great partner of ours. Matt Moratori specifically has been always a great friend. Senator Moran and Representative Lenatra have always been a force, so I really appreciate what they do for us.
And I want to thank both of you for coming.
Thanks.
I want to thank both of you for coming on, and I would welcome the conversation maybe in another 4 to 6 weeks. Maybe the three of us gather back for another segment, maybe provide an update if one is available, just so folks can be on the inside track and the know-how and start planning out things if they're looking for things to do when the warmer weather gets here.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
We're going to step aside. That's going to do it for our number one of Monday Night Talk. When we come back, State Rep Matt Muratori, yes, he returns, along with Michelle Pecoraro, Executive Director of Plymouth 400, We'll talk about commemorating 400 years. We will be back in just a few moments. You're tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
WATD-FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
What can give you a competitive edge in today's red-hot housing market? Rocket can. That's because Rocket Mortgage can give you a verified approval. It could help your offer stand out. Rocket technology provides a rock-solid verification of your income, assets, and credit, giving sellers greater confidence in you. Go to rocketmortgage.com or call us today at 8338-ROCKET.
A verified approval is based on an underwriter's analysis of your individual financial information, appraisal, and title report. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender license in all 50 states and MLSConsumerAssets.org, number 3030.
Liberty. Liberty Mutual Insurance Company customizes your home insurance so you only pay for what you need.
As a minimalist, paying less for insurance is more.
Nice place. Is your house a bubble?
It's a dome. I find corners unnecessary.
At Liberty Mutual, that's how we feel about overpaying for insurance.
But I do miss having shelves.
What would you put on them?
Nothing, obviously.
Only pay for what you need at libertymutual.com.
Liberty, 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 liberty.
Hey, it's John Shea here from Almost Famous Radio, introducing you to independent bands and musicians from across New England every Tuesday night, 8 to 10, brought to you by Tiny and Sons Glass. Tomorrow night, another full show in store for you with new music and upcoming events to share, and we'll be joined on the Tiny stage by singer-songwriter Yuping Zhu. That's tomorrow, 8 to 10, right here on 95.9 WATD and 95.9WATD.com.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Hour number two, and we will later on this hour speak with Mary Waldron, Executive Director of the Old Colony Planning Council. But first, we're here to talk a little bit about the Plymouth 400. Talk a little bit about the celebration. Well, the celebration that was kind of put on hold. It's funny, as we were during the break talking and getting ready to come on air, realizing that it was a little more than a year ago that, that not only did I have State Rep Matt Muratori, who's returning from his earlier segment, and a good friend, Executive Director for the Plymouth 400, Michelle Pacoraro, we were all sitting in studio with good friend Peter Brown talking about the pending celebrations. I think I even was given a fantastic memento of that were minted, if I'm correct, Michelle.
Oh yes, the coin, the medal.
A medal. I want to call it a coin because you did not call it a coin.
Right, exactly. Doesn't have any actual face value.
So here we are. And we're still enduring COVID. How have you endured COVID, Michelle? And how have you had you and your committee and the folks you work with done your best to try to shift things to still happen?
Yeah, I'd have to say that in the beginning, we were thinking, like everybody else, that, oh, it's March, by the summer, by September, we'll be out of this and moving on. And and here we still
so
are.
So true. It's so true.
I know. But I'd have to say that, you know, at first it was just earth shattering for everybody, not just Plymouth 400, but for everybody. But certainly for us, we were 8 weeks out from our opening ceremony, which was going to be probably you know, the biggest thing that Plymouth had seen in a very, very long time. And it was 2 years in the making just to get that event together. And so, yeah, it was shocking.
You talk about shutting down streets and some major people coming to town and, you know, security and
Yes, when we think about back to all those meetings we were having with security people and law enforcement and, you know, infrastructure, all of that, we met and met and met, and then all of a sudden it just no more meetings. So, but I would have to say that we just put our heads down working from home last March, April, May. We just put our heads down and said, okay, what is this going to look like now? And because that's really all you can do. So we revised our plan. In May, we actually did a press release with the new plans. We revised again in, I think, August or September of last year. And now we're revising again based upon just, you know, all of the guidelines and where we're at with vaccine rollout and all of that. So we keep a good eye on that, but we've also not stopped. You know, we haven't stopped our quest to make sure that this commemoration is meaningful. And so we've done a lot with virtual events and programming, and I think that has been a real silver lining in all of this.
For folks who don't know, how many different virtual events have you done, and can folks still tap into those and experience them?
Absolutely. Well, Matt was part of one that hasn't even been launched yet. So we've done about six virtual events so far. We started in September with the launch of the book, The Massachusetts Chronicles, which went to every public school in Massachusetts and was a collaboration between Plymouth 400, Bridgewater State University, and Plymouth Public Schools.
And the state,
yep. And Matt.
No, not me. That was Vinny.
That was Vinny. But and the state, and the town. I mean, you know, Plymouth also has been very helpful. Yep. So,
35 copies went to every school in the Commonwealth.
Yes, and that was Bridgewater and Massachusetts made that all happen. Mm.
Right.
Bridgewater had a very a generous donor who actually made it possible to get those books and to send them to every school in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And the production of the book was made possible by the state. So it was just a great partnership, and I think a great outcome for Plymouth 400.
It's a great legacy, actually, too.
Yeah.
True stories.
So that got done in September. And then we also, you know, we have a traveling exhibit, the Wampanoag history exhibit, Our Story. And we couldn't move that around. We couldn't show it anywhere. So we made a virtual tour out of that. And we launched that in September. And that is all available on our YouTube channel and on, you know, through our website. We did, again with Bridgewater State University, who's been great, we did the Indigenous History Conference, which was going to actually, it would have accommodated about 400 participants as a live conference. But what ended up being was we had to break it up literally into nine different weekends. And we did that, and we had over 1,800 people viewing it.
Wow, that's terrific.
So that was great. We also, NBC did a special for us in December, right around Forefathers Day, of kind of the accomplishments of and the partnerships of the Plymouth 400 anniversary, in which a lot of our partners were featured, Plymouth Plant, Plymouth Tuxet, and NEHTS in Boston, and of course, Pilgrim Hall Museum. So all of those were captured in that. And right now, we just launched a speaker series. So in my first foray into interviewing, Kevin. So what we did, so much work had been done in preparation for the 400th. Authors and filmmakers, documentary filmmakers, and poetry, and just a lot of work, publishing. So we took those books, those authors, and we we asked them to be part of a speaker series, which has turned into an interview show on PAC TV called Plymouth 400 Conversations. Tonight is the second installment when we actually are interviewing Chris Lloyd, who was the publisher of Mass Chronicles. Our first one, we interviewed Mary Shields, who was on our board and also the author, creator of the Barnacle and Husk series, all related to the 400th. We have others coming up. We're going to be, we have Andrew Giles Buckley, who did a documentary called Stephano, which is based upon Shakespeare's The Tempest. It's the lead character in The Tempest, but the character was actually fashioned after Stephen Hopkins, who was a Mayflower passenger ultimately. So that's a cool twist to the whole story. We also are interviewing, there's a new version of Plymouth Plantation that is newly annotated by historians and has a foreword by Paula Peters, a native Wampanoag person. So that will be one of our interviews. We've got, so many cool people who have done neat things. Our friends in Duxbury have a book that they created. We're going to interview them. Our friends in Eastham created another, a book. So the authors of that will be interviewed. It's going to go on and on. And my feeling is, and, you know, you guys stop me because I could talk all day. But but my feeling is, that never would have happened. We wouldn't have had that concisely on video if this hadn't happened. All of that would have been out there, but it would have been out there. You know, it wouldn't have been kind of consolidated like this. So I feel really good about the virtual stuff. But of course, we're chomping the bit to do an event. So
I have to say, it's very interesting how we may be bemoaning the fact that we've had to endure a global pandemic, but out of strife, fantastic things have indeed happened, like this, yeah, this series that has been forged, that is being done. And I was earlier in the show paying tribute to Representative Muratori because of the great work that he has done using an entity like PAC TV and being able to work with different partnerships. You mentioned Bridgewater State University. Mm-hmm. I think it's fantastic that even though we sit here and say so much was lost because of this virus, I think that there were other things that were gained. Am I wrong in saying that?
Not at all. In fact, you know, events really should be the culmination of the work, not the main event. I mean, yes, they're the main event because that's where you get your public and that's where we get our tourism, you know, dollars and that kind of thing. But what I found leading this organization too is that, you know, I came from a marketing tourism background. I was also a teacher way back when, but really in the last 20 years, marketing tourism. And what I found is, you know, we're an educational organization. We are a 501c3 educational organization. So all of this good work has really been the crux of what this commemoration was about and probably should be about, especially in light of how we and other organizations have been able to maneuver, to pivot, to make lemonade out of lemons. I really have to give kudos to all of my colleagues, you know, at Plymouth Patuxent and at Pilgrim Hall Museum, and especially in and around Plymouth, the Chamber's done an amazing job. See Plymouth has done a really great job of keeping Plymouth kind of in. You know, it's a hard job because you can't invite people yet, and yet you want to keep us in their minds. So see, Plymouth has done a great job of doing that. So I really think that everybody has risen to this occasion.
And I think, Kevin, if I may, I think what's going to happen because of what everything Michelle has done and is saying and what see Plymouth has done and the Chamber and all that, I think you're going to see Plymouth as an explosion of tourism. once people get more settled, because I think more people are going to, I'm on the tourism committee at the state level, and I think what we're hearing is we're going to see more people traveling locally first.
Yep.
Before they travel internationally. So the work that they're all doing in and around the Plymouth area, I think is Michelle's right. It's showing the interest of people what's happening in Plymouth, so that people will come, you know, when it's time to happen.
Yeah, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with the state representative Matt Muratore and Michelle Pecoraro, executive director of Plymouth 400, and we're talking about, you know, what is to come in regards to any celebrations or any events that are going to be held. What's being forged to celebrate America's hometown, the birth of America 400 years ago, the landing of the Pilgrims and beyond. What I know you've probably revised your list of events, whether they're virtual, whether they're going to be in person. And I probably think that you'll be doing that for the next few months until we get the go ahead that yes, the virus is at lower numbers and it's safe for us to venture out in the larger numbers, still have to wear a mask, but that things are on the upswing to being normal. What do you have in the works, at least in the near future, that you're looking at least at the moment?
Sure. So we had planned to do some live events in the spring. We don't think that that's going to be possible as far as gathering large crowds, but certainly we can do a hybrid. And so what we're talking about right now is on April 23rd, we were going to have former Prime Minister John Major coming here. Well, he's obviously probably not going to be traveling here. So so what we've agreed with NEHGS, who was our partner in that event, is that we can do something that's kind of a hybrid where it's more of a media focused event. We do have the new British consul in Boston, Peter Abbott, just wants to do something, you know, a wreath laying, something that that will kind of tie us together with what they've been doing, our colleagues over in the UK have been doing. And he's also interested in getting the new ambassador from DC up here for that. So we're in talks about that, but that would be a very restricted media only, maybe a few higher end sponsors who would be invited to actually be in a large room, socially distanced, with and having the ability to interview those people and some of the sponsors, etc. So that's what we're looking at. The wreath laying itself, the remembrance ceremony itself, will cover both Pilgrim and Wampanoag people, and it may not be a wreath laying, it may be something else, but it will be a ceremony of remembrance, but it will be very quick. We won't invite lots of people to view it. Of course, people will, you know, will come and stop and watch, but we're not going to invite people to come. We're not going to have food trucks. We're not going to have things that make them stay. And then we'll move in indoors to a large indoor space and do the rest of that as a media event.
Any thought of maybe pushing anything further, pushing things back to 2022? Or is the idea to wait and see what happens if you have to go beyond 2021?
Well, my short answer to that is at some point, you know, we run out of funds. So we've been in a great place because, again, we were 8 weeks out from our first event, so we hadn't expended a whole lot. We're holding on to it in order to do these live events in the spring and summer. And so at some point, you know, we're not going to be able to make it to 2022 unless we get a huge benefactor, you know, that wants to see it all happen. as planned. But I think that this is almost an example, a sampling for the future of what happened in 2020. You know, the whole idea of this commemoration, a pandemic, which 100 years before happened during the 300th commemoration or just before it. The fact that when you look back in history, it was a plague that really wiped out the Wampanoag people prior to the pilgrims coming. Didn't wipe them out completely, but certainly devastated their community. So there are all kinds of historic through lines here. So I think that, you know, us being an example of what we were able to do in 2020 and 2021 is going to resonate years ahead, you know, years down the line.
Did you want to
think, Kevin, if I may? Think, Kevin, that I think like the Thanksgiving Day parade that happens year after year, I think will take on a new meaning to it. And I think, you know, I'm not sure what we're going to do. We got hundreds of thousands of people to come now, but I think that's going to even explode even more. And at Plymouth Patuxent and Pilgrim Hall Museum and all these areas of importance, I think are just going to explode in this area because of the work the Plymouth 400 did.
Yeah, if you're tuning in, we're speaking with Michelle Pecoraro. She's the executive director of Plymouth 400 and state rep Matt Muratori. We're talking a little bit about Plymouth 400, the celebration. The remembrance of 400 years, America's hometown. Talking legislatively to both of you, we'll start with you, Matt, and that is with a new administration down in D.C., we have a new president and we have some new faces in Congress. Is there a chance to see if we could get some, if this celebration can get some grant money, get some funding, get some assistance, or is if we were going to get it, we would have received it over the past 3 to 4 years.
I think we probably would have received it over the past 3 or 4 years. And I think now with the pandemic, it's harder to get money for things like this, whether it's statewide or federally. I do, though, think that there is probably more of a possibility to maybe get the President of the United States here at some point.
Right.
I think that's a real possibility only because of, as you know, Kevin, I mean, you know, my party is a minority in this state and the majority party are Democrats. And, you know, you get some great people like, you know, the former Senate President Therese Murray, who's good friends with the President Biden. And,
right.
You know, you got Senator Markey and Senator Elizabeth Warren and Congressman Keating. And these people are very close to Biden, Mayor Walsh. So there's a lot of connections. So there's a good possibility, I think, that, you know, maybe that may happen at some point.
What do you think, Michelle? Do you think it's possible to get the president to be in attendance at some point in time this year?
I've already put it out there. I've already put it out to people like Therese Murray is the vice president of our board of directors. So at our last Zoom meeting, I said, "So, Therese, how well do you know President Biden?" So we don't know. You know, at this point, he's got a lot of fish to fry right now. So, but really anybody from the administration, you know, could be nice. I mean, I would love it if, Mayor Walsh comes back in a different capacity, and joins us. That would be kind of fun. And it would also, you know, kind of show that, you know, we're still in it, and he was always aware of it and a part of it. So I think that there's lots of possibilities in that regard. I will say that, you know, Matt and I discussed funding, state funding, back the last round of budget discussions, and I just couldn't see us taking any more money from the state at a time when there's so much need. So we agreed that we weren't going to go for state funding in this last fiscal year, and we did not. And it's okay. You know, we're still okay. So, and they've done so much for us. The state and the town of Plymouth have really been very, you know, they have seen the they've seen the results, or they've seen what the results could be from a commemoration like this. And now, of course, it wasn't what we thought, but I think there are different results that resonate differently in cultural and educational areas.
As we have 4 or 5 minutes left in this segment, and maybe there's something that we haven't mentioned, but we want to make sure we share with the folks who are tuning in to this particular segment, whether it's where they can check in for regular updates, where they can find out what's going on, or if how they can help if help is needed for these events. Please feel free to share that, Michelle.
Sure. Well, I have two more events that I just want to talk about. One is another hybrid type of event, and that is the Wampanoag Ancestors Walk, which was supposed to take place in May. What we're looking at right now is the Wampanoag Advisory Committee is creating a virtual walk out of that. And if we can do something hybrid where maybe there's a small ceremony on the waterfront, we will join those two things together, the walk and the ceremony, in a hybrid kind of way. And then finally, and this is an event that can't be a hybrid, it can't be virtual, it is the Maritime Salute and Festival, the Plymouth 400 Maritime Salute and Festival. That was scheduled for June of this year. We certainly aren't going to ask hordes of people to come to Plymouth at the end of June of this year. But we are looking at sliding that out to late August or early to mid-September. If we can do that, which we don't know yet, so I'm going to preface everything with, you know, we just don't know what the guidelines are going to be, how far along the rollout for vaccine is going to be. I had heard that, you know, the younger, healthier population will start getting vaccines in June, which means that maybe by the end of the summer, we'll have enough out there so that we can gather safely. But that would be a wonderful way to really, you know, wrap this up with a wonderful maritime festival where we could invite some of our colleagues from overseas and do some of the things we didn't get to do in the last 12 months.
Matt, anything you want to say in closing? Again, I know you're kind of the king of tourism, and I know that that's one of the prideful things we talked about earlier is how important tourism is. Anything you want to say in closing in regards to the Plymouth 400 commemoration?
No, I just want to thank Michelle and her team and the board there at the Plymouth 400 for all they've done. They've really changed, I think, Plymouth for the better. It was always good, but I think it's even better now. I think, like I said earlier, I think you're going to see a difference in the amount of people that are going to be coming over the next decade or so because of the groundwork that they have done for this. So I thank Michelle and everyone for that.
Michelle, is there a website that folks go to for information?
Yeah, absolutely. It's Plymouth400Inc.org, Inc., I-N-C, as in incorporated. So Plymouth400Inc.org.
And as far as the interviews that you've been doing, do you have any times, or should they visit PAC TV's website for dates and times?
Actually, there's a landing page right on our site. If you go right to our site on the homepage, there's a red bar at the top where we put like important things that are happening soon and now. But if anyone wants to tune in to PAC TV tonight at 7:30, you'll get to see one of those conversations.
They'll have to miss a half hour of your show, though, Kevin.
Oh, no, Kevin.
That's all right. It'll definitely be worth it. Well, I want to thank you both for taking time out of your busy schedules to update folks in regards to the commemoration for the Plymouth 400th anniversary. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thanks, Kevin. Yeah, thank you, Kevin.
We'll have you guys back definitely in the next few weeks or next couple of months.
That'd be great.
We will step aside, and if you're not turning us off to watch those great interviews, we'll be back in just a few moments here on Monday Night Talk, heard only on 95.9 WATD.
Okay, set it down over there and then go to Bay 5.
Indeed knows unexpected growth can stretch your business thin.
We need to keep going to finish.
Like Amir's warehouse. To expand capacity, he needs to get started hiring right.
right away.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. And the moment you sponsor a job on Indeed, you get a short list of quality candidates from our resume database. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get a $75 credit for your first sponsored job post. Terms and conditions apply.
If I'm not commuting anymore, where do I really want to live?
While you handle life's questions, Merrill Guided Investing helps you manage your portfolio and invest for your next move with the option to work with an advisor at a low cost and minimum. Merrill, a Bank of America company. Visit MerrillEdge.com/investing goals to get started today.
Investing involves risk. Merrill Lynch, Pierce Fenner, and Smith Incorporated, both a registered broker-dealer and investment advisor, member SIPC. Investment products are not FDIC insured or not bank guaranteed and may lose value.
The People's Truth, a show dedicated to bringing communities together and keeping the truth alive. Join your host, me, Benny Rabbi, as we talk with businesses, organizations, and people around New England and the world in search of the People's Truth. Join us tonight at 9 p.m. on 95.9 WATD.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We have arrived at the final segment of this week's Monday Night Talk. And this particular segment will focus in on the Old Colony Planning Council, which actually serves the 17 communities. A lot of the things that OCPC does involves when it comes to development, when it comes to planning, transportation needs. Joining us to talk about the latest with the Old Colony Planning Council is their executive director, Mary Waldron. Mary, welcome to the segment.
Kevin, thank you very much for having me today. I appreciate it.
If you could tell us, for folks who may not know what the Old Colony Planning Council is and who its members are, just give us a little background for the folks who are just tuning in.
Nope. Terrific. Thank you. We are kind of an unknown commodity here, but our local planners and transportation folks know all about us. We are a regional planning agency. We are one of 13 in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. We represent 17 communities from Easton, Avon, all the way to the Plymouth border. Kind of like a swath, if you will, right under kind of the 128 belt. And each are within a very unique in their various, statements in terms of they're from a city like the city of Brockton to a small town like the town of Avon, which has like maybe 5,000 residents. So we as a regional planning agency have various legislative duties, including working with our communities on regional aspects. So, right, water, roads, air, just don't stop at a particular community's border. Hence, there's the need to really open up and be a convener of discussions, but be also a convener of applying for grant funding or transportation matters where... 128 kind of cuts down through, but there's also Route 3 and Route 44, but also Route 58 and 18, and I could go on and on. So we really serve as a convener, but we also serve as a kind of a supplement. Many of the communities that we have do not have a planner or an economic development director. You have town planners or you have town administrators who are kind of the chief bottle washer, if you will, and trying to deal with so many different things. And so we feel that we're an extension of our 17 communities.
During the past, well, we're going on a year now, we have had to endure something that none of us could foresee, and that is a pandemic, a global pandemic. How has business differed? How has your operations differed as an organization during COVID-19?
I think the fact that we're talking about COVID-19, 12 months after is still something that we never envisioned. I am extremely lucky to have extraordinary staff who are resilient themselves, but who are also innovative. When COVID started, our biggest challenge was communicating just within ourselves, but also with our communities. So we developed a survey back then, back in, it was more like March, end of March, early April. And we asked our communities a short survey about what your needs are, tell us. And that helped us guide us in terms of how we reinvented ourselves and how we pivoted. So one of the things, we started a newsletter. We have over 500 stakeholders within Southeastern Mass who subscribe to our newsletter, and we're informing them about the latest news in terms of not only COVID, but also grant opportunities as a result of COVID. We played a very strong role in terms of the state, the shared street program that was offered by the state. So like when you go into either Brockton or a couple of other communities where they took away those parking spaces to allow those restaurants and other vendors to go into the street so they can conduct business in a very safe manner. You know, we held a webinar and invited conversations to happen. But I think most importantly, we really did go to our community. So while we may not be able to be meeting in person, we set up individual 17 individual meetings, Zoom meetings like we're doing today with our stakeholders in those communities to say, this is what our survey found. This is what was said, you know, where are you now? And it kind of goes back to basic. It's really developing those relationships with the various people within the communities, and just asking them, what are you hearing? What are your issues? You know, what can we help with? What, you know, and more importantly, you know, not to give false, you know, impressions that we can do everything for them either. But we, just like every other organization, we worked remotely, and we're continuing to work remotely. So I have 18 staff members here in the organization. They come from all over the area. One is in New Hampshire, so he's stuck up there. But, you know, how do we then first, how do we get ourselves be very productive? And we did. And so we had to change. We have Zoom and other virtual ways of communicating. We changed our ways of our software. So we have Office 365. So many of the communities who may or may not have that, but that allowed us to have a Teams meeting. And again, having us be able to communicate much more efficiently, effectively. That allowed also for the staff who were working remotely to get their documents in the cloud. And I know this kind of talks maybe a little bit, you know, to technology, but that technology is like everything. And some communities have that ability and some don't. And so we're kind of in that mode right now of, now that we're kind of feel that we're up and running in a way that we can communicate internally, we're now in the process of building, continuing to build that relationship with our 17 communities to assist them.
Knowing that COVID-19 had an adverse effect on transportation, and knowing that that's an area that your organization focuses on, and the committees and groups that meet to discuss the needs, because I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, your organization helps the overall transportation plan as well the state puts together moving forward. So how did you have to do things differently, or how did you have to tackle any of your approaches, traffic studies, knowing that there was a difference in how we travel because many people were working from home?
Yeah, it's that really is a one of, I think, the hardest part, but it's, I feel that we've really made some great accomplishments. But that comes with having some partners with MassDOT, Brockton Area Transit, GATRA, right, in terms of their expansion, in terms of opening up some opportunities. Now, obviously, the MBTA and many of the transportation saw a decline in their ridership. That ridership seems to have been increasing as well, and some of it is right, everybody wants to be in a safe environment. So Brockton Area Transit and others and Mass, the MBTA, really have done a yeoman's job in terms of making those modes of transportation to be effective. Working on bike trails, people, you know, my understanding is from my staff is that, you know, bikes would be like flying off the racks because many people chose to say that if they're going to do anything, particularly during the warm month, that they were going to they're going to take a bike. And so that piece, and we have a very strong network of people who are working on biking and having that be a mode and making sure that the roads have a bike lane so that they're safe in terms of their ridership. And on top of that, people also are walking more. I bumped into somebody here in the downtown who walks 4 miles one way to get to his job on the west side of the city. And so I asked him, I said, you know, have you thought about taking the Brockton area transit? And his concern was a little bit of some of the safety. And but anyway, but my point is that people are walking. So we need to make sure sidewalks, pedestrian. So the transportation department has been, you know, Carly Gilmer, who's been going to be, I think if he said in March, he'll be 25 years here with this organization. Just renowned. He's like the E.F. Hutton of transportation in Massachusetts. And he's right here in our office, taking Charlie's expertise and his knowledge and working with our community. So a place that's more dense, like City of Brockton, and helping them and keeping an eye out for funding and grant funding and any kind of funding that could help with either crosswalks and the such. But it's also then working with the other communities like the town of Avon. And again, some of that is really developing, you know, Charlie has the faith and or people have faith in him and his expertise, but knowing to go to him, there's an issue, whether it's Reservoir Street in Avon or whether it's in Hanover, the corridor study that we recently did. Representative DeCoste had reached out recently, and you know that had been on, we did a webinar and that's posted on the town's website. That information is so critical. So back to the transportation, the ridership. So we participate and have a very strong relationship with Brockton Area Transit and Mike Lambert, who's the administrator, and working with the communities. And you know, again, it's the partnership that we have with them. And if they have something, they developed a discounted ridership for the residents of Brockton so that they are not paying the high pass, you know, the ridership cost. And, you know, our offer is to help get it out to the 500 stakeholders on our newsletter. So, you know, communication is really, really, really critical. And hence, I think, you know, the work that you're doing, Kevin, and reaching out through not only cable, but also through radio and through all other venues is critical that we help assist in getting that word out.
Again, if you are just tuned in, we are speaking with Mary Waldron. She's the executive director of the Old Colony Planning Council, serving 17 communities. Brockton, of course, kind of the anchor pin. I think that's where one of their main locations are. And I know they also serve Plymouth, the Plymouth area, and in and around the South Shore. And we're talking about Old Colony Planning, doing a little catch up with her and also a little look forward. Looking at the new year, here we are, you know, we're cruising into the second month of 2021. What is on the horizon for Old Colony Planning Council, knowing that hopefully in the next 4 to 6 months, we may shed everything that we've been dealing with a global pandemic?
Well, it's a great segue, Kevin. This year we're ready to, we'll be unveiling a new website, a new logo, mission statement, a vision statement. I can give you a little bit of a lead, and I think it can help answer even the question about how, you know, what's the future. And so I start off with our mission at Old Colony Planning Council is we assist cities and towns in planning for present and future needs, utilizing our local knowledge, our technical expertise, and regional collaboration. So to the very question about what does the future hold, we don't know, right? We just found that out last year, is that we don't know what our future is. We do know with a vaccine that may help, alleviate some, but it's not going to cure it all. I think that we, as this future is going to be changing on a day-to-day, a week-to-week, a month-to-month, but we as Old Colony Planning Council with staff that we have in place and our council delegates, right? I have Christine Joy, who's a select board member from the town of Plimpton. She serves as the president of our council. Having her be a select board member and the president of our council is such a critical piece because she's got her finger on the pulse. Dottie Fuginetti, who is a staff member, she is our economic recovery planner. She is a select board member in the town of Easton. So having, you know, that's just two examples. I can give you a thousand more, whether it's someone on a planning board or what have you. So how do we plan for the future? Is the reality is we have to make sure that we're tuned into Board of Selectmen meetings and city council meetings and planning board meetings and what sort of zoning changes. We have to be in tune with our Chamber of Commerce's. So the Plymouth area, Metro South, South Shore are great partners to us. But it's also going to make sure that we also are in tune with, you know, the Campello Business Association, which is a small organization, or Pembroke Chamber, which is a smaller organization, but they have their own needs. And, you know, it sounds like a lot, and it is on some days when it all comes at you, but it's so critical that we are able to continue to have that dialogue and then be able to, you know, pivot accordingly. So, you know, as we get down the line, you know, in terms of looking at, you know, being resilient and being sustainable, you know, and being equitable at the same, you know, at the same time, you know, in terms of all of what is going on in our world, and to not be in tune with Black and brown businesses and how they've struggled and how do we are able to assist them and point them. And, you know, one of the things that Dottie was able to pull together was a business guide that we shared with all the communities, and we shared with planners, we put it out, you know, shared with our chamber partners. And, you know, I think all of that is really pretty important that we continue to keep on top of those things.
What are some of the important studies? I know that the OCPC does conduct a series of corridor studies, traffic studies. Are there any particular areas that OCPC is going to be looking at in depth this coming year? Anything that is top of the mind for you, or anything that you've done most recently that has been tackled?
Great questions, and the answer is yes across the board. One of the things that we, you know, because it's federal funding, the Economic Development Administration, we have an element that is unique to regional planning agencies. We have the Area Agency on Aging, which is federally funded, but we provide funding to Council on Aging's and nutrition programs and things of that sort. So David Klein, who is an Abington resident and is the administrator for the Area Agency, he just sent out a survey that there's something like 1,000 surveys have come back about the needs and what is needed. He needs to take those surveys and write, and the idea is not just take a survey and sit on it, take those surveys and really act upon it and perhaps change policies or develop new programs depending upon where funding is. You know, Charlie in the transportation department, currently Ray Guarino, is working on a climate change. And what is climate change and transportation? Well, the reality is modes of transportation. And they work closely with the community planning and economic development group. So, you know, it's a study that is just beginning and doing some outreach. And then we have an overall public participation, back to what we started earlier. And that is, you know, how are we reaching out? And we are right now looking at a software that could allow people to at 3 o'clock in the morning, if they're up and they can't sleep, but yet they wanted to have their voice be heard, whether anonymous or not, but be able to go on a virtual map on our website and be able to post their comments and their interests and their concerns. So some of the reality is that we see the same old people showing up to town meetings or to planning board meetings or whatever. And their voice is, nope, we don't want housing, or no, we don't want this, and yes or no. We want to be able to make sure that it's very inclusive. That's something that we're working on this year. The municipal surveys are going to be revamped again. We're probably going to do that on an annual basis and seeing where the needs are. You know, unfortunately, there's not enough funding under the federal government or even the state government to fund all the needs of our communities. So the TIP is often referred to and under transportation, and it's a plan, and only. We're given only X amount of dollars, we the regional planning agencies, and what we need to be able to do is prioritize. And then we also want to make sure that we are being equitable in terms of meeting the needs across all of our 17 communities. There's never going to be enough money. But I think in the end, like there, so there's the Joint Transportation Committee and the MPO, Old Colony Planning Council, MPO meetings, which are stakeholders from the federal government, from the state government, as well as local, to really have a robust discussion. Talk about ridership, talk about traffic studies, talk about, you know, crash reports and things of that nature. I dream about that at night. but the impact, the fact that the dialogue is happening, I feel this dialogue is helping make our communities safer because we're able then to be targeted and to help prioritize. You know, when we do work with our legislative delegation, Senator Mike Brady and Claire Cronin, as well as everybody, I mean, we have all those from across the region, and develop that so they know what the needs are in case we do need some assistance through the transportation bond bill.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Mary Waldron, Executive Director of the Old Colony Planning Council. You a couple of times during your last explanation, you mentioned the federal government. How does the change in administration have an effect on your organization, whether it's funding-wise or any business that you may do when you're putting together studies or any assistance for various projects?
So we do have a very large portion of our budget. 50% of Old Colony Planning Council budget is transportation related. So our relationship with the federal government, the change of administrations, I can say at least a test from my last year being on here, didn't affect anything. And I don't know how it may otherwise. I will say that through the Economic Development Administration, EDA, we are working strongly with our, with I know town of Stoughton and the town of Plymouth, both we've been working with them on an application, and you know hopefully we can hear soon about that. It's targeting what is needed, and it all has to do with jobs for the Economic Development Administration. So I would say my hope is that it continues to be as it may. My hope is that it can be increased with some additional funding. You know, our communities are hurting. They really are, and just struggling to stay afloat. this year, I think everybody's been anticipating is going to be okay. I think it's the year 2022 that many have cautioned many of us to say that may be the year that further layoffs and things of that nature. So whatever we can do to continue the dialogue, we have a very good relationship with Congressman Lynch's office. We have a very good relationship with Senator Markey's office through the local Jim Cantell. I'm going to say Jim. Yeah, thank you. And I'm sorry, Jim, for messing up your name. But I know Jim, and being a local guy and being engaged, has his pulse. And so I think that's to our benefit. So I can only hope for more funding to come, and we can definitely keep you posted on that.
We have a few minutes left in our segment. And in this particular portion, I want to give you an opportunity to maybe touch upon something that maybe we didn't, or that you feel is kind of essential to at least sharing with the folks who are tuned into this particular segment.
Kevin, thank you. You know, I first want to start with the volunteers, and the volunteers are really the council board members. Like, they don't get compensated. They are not a full-time employees of us or the Old Colony Planning Council. They just truly care about their community. So we recently redid our bylaws. Lee Hartman, the planner in Plymouth, was extraordinarily helpful, like literally was brought a lot of history, but he was very helpful. Probably spent at least about good, you know, 10 hours with me and dividing that. That takes commitment and passion and knowing what work that we do. But I really do want to be able to, for all 17 communities, you have a delegate and you have an alternate. And we're actually just one person shy of one of our communities, but we're working strong on getting a representative. If you have the representative, then you have that voice. So just yesterday I had a conversation with Peter Spagone from East Bridgewater. Peter, a select board member, but he just became voted as a delegate to Old Colony Planning Council. I was on the phone with him for about an hour, and you know, his energy and his passion, Mayor, we've got to do this and this has got to be done. And it was exciting to hear that. But again, it's a volunteer. He doesn't get paid for that. So I really want to acknowledge all of the delegates and alternates. There's 17 of them, and I do have every intention of visiting every community that we have. So that's one. The other part is really the staff. During COVID, what they did, I would be wrong if I started naming people, but really in terms of the communication and surveys and Zoom and all of that, they came together. It made us stronger as a team. And as we move forward, as you know, we're excited about where we're going. And, you know, I will say that we've had some promotions of some of the staff. We had Bruce Hughes, who had had stepped down, retired. Joanne Zygmunt is going to be taking his place as the economic development. So she's senior economic development and environmental planner. So her skill set are now being moved over, and just extraordinary in terms of what it works. So there's a whole host of people, Paul Chouinard from the transportation department, as well as Sean Bailey, and lots of different things. You know, and if you don't have a chance to kind of hear all what we're talking about in this short segment, you know, to go to our website, www.ocpcrpa.org. And as I said, website's going to change, and how we interface with our stakeholders will be changing, and we look forward to having more dialogue.
Mary, I want to thank you for your time, and I want to thank the efforts of not only your staff and the folks there. You mentioned a bunch of people besides Charlie Kilmer, Bruce Hughes, and I know other people. I know other members. You mentioned Peter Spagone. I know Dan Salvucci, who attends those meetings regularly. And I'm just a few. Joanne Zygmunt, who is somebody who's been very active in her community in Brockton and beyond. It's great to see that work like that it's coming together, even though we've had to endure, you know, a pandemic, and it's great.
Thank you, Kevin. I'm very proud of this organization, and I'm proud to know where we take it over the next few years.
Well, we look forward to having many more conversations with you and members of your staff.
Thank you.
And that will do it for this evening's Monday Night Talk. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great night.